Welcome to the Next Regeneration Podcast by the Osteology Foundation. We feature hot topics and novel perspectives, always with relevance to the dental career and practice. Join our hosts, Anina and Elena, as they speak with new guests from around the world each month and learn more about what's important for the next generation in oral regeneration.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast in the new year. With the new year, we thought we want to talk about personalized dentistry. This topic seems so far away in some ways, and yet it's being discussed more and more, and it seems like it's becoming a reality. The question is, how is personalized dentistry defined, and what does it mean for our community and the patients? Will it impact our clinical work? And how will research be influenced? For this, we are very happy that we can discuss these questions with our guests today. Right, Elena?
Yes, Anina. So today we are extremely privileged to discuss the topic of personalized medicine with Professor William Giannobile. So although I really believe he really does not need any introduction, I just wanted to say a few words about a few of his numerous achievements so far. So Professor Giannobile is a former president and board member of the Osteology Foundation, and is currently the dean of the Harvard School of Dental Medicine. He's a leading expert in the field of periodontology, oral regenerative medicine, and tissue engineering. And in the past years, he has been deeply involved in translating research innovations into personalized care. So he really is one of the pioneers of personalized dentistry. So I think we could not have a better guest with us to discuss this fascinating topic. So welcome to our podcast, Professor Giannobile, and thank you so much for finding the time to join us today.
Well, thank you so much, Elena and Anina. It's my great pleasure to be with you today. Really an honor and a privilege to be a part of the Next Regeneration podcast, representing the Osteology Foundation. And I'd like to congratulate you on the previous podcast that you've done. And I've had the opportunity recently to listen to many of them. And so I'm so pleased to be a part of this with you talking today.
Dear Professor, also from my side, a warm welcome to our podcast. Before we talk more about personalized dentistry, I would like to ask you if you can first of all define personalized dentistry and precision dentistry for us. As many people may have heard about these terms, but they may not necessarily understand what they mean. And why has this new approach become so popular in the last years?
Yes. So, Anina, that's a really good question, because when we first started to see this field come together, you heard the term personalized medicine. And I think, you know, in dentistry, we've clinicians have worked to personalize our care for our patients for many years. Personalized medicine was originally described, the term coined by Dr. Leroy Hood. He was a physician, and he was really one of the pioneers. And it's defined as a type of medical care in which the treatment is customized for the individual patient. And so this is something that I think we all do as we develop our treatment plans for our patients. And he defined these four different components. Oftentimes you hear the four P's of personalized medicine as predictive, personalized, preventive, and participatory. And so those four components are a part of personalized medicine. So helping us customize and be able to predict how the outcomes of the patient might be based on risk. Personalized, meaning you really do a comprehensive evaluation of your patient, their own inherent risk factors, their medical considerations, as we look at devising that treatment plan for the patients. And then preventive for younger patients, to really look at using more of a preventive approach versus reconstructive when things have maybe gone too far. And then participatory, I think we find that our patients have much better outcomes when they get involved with us, when they understand the critical components of their care and how they are really necessary to have a good outcome. So the second part of your question, what is precision medicine? And so this tends to be a more contemporary term than personalized medicine. And I think the reason for that is it ends up being just a more comprehensive term, maybe an evolution, if you will, of personalized medicine. And it's designed to optimize the efficiency or therapeutic benefit for specific groups of patients, especially those using genetic or molecular profiling. So as the field of personalized medicine evolved, we started to see we would be more comprehensive in that approach. And so typically precision care does involve genetics and then all of these other, you know, point of care types of diagnostics.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So thank you for setting the stage and providing, let's say, a common background so everybody can really start from the same page and understand what we mean when we talk about personalized and precision dentistry. So needless to say, but you know, the idea that in the future we will be able to tailor the therapies and perhaps even the biomaterials to the specific patient's needs sounds to me very tempting and promising. And I see that you have published a lot on this topic, and it seems to be already an integrated part of your clinical and research work. So is this true? Where are we with the clinical implementation of this concept? Because sometimes we have this idea that it's more in the research field still, but has it already become a reality? What do you think?
Yes, it's a great point, Elena. I think it has become a reality. And so when we think it's maybe not the traditional approach of considering personalized medicine as we personalized, for example, biomaterials or reconstructive scaffolds for patients. But since you bring it up, I think we should talk about it, especially since this is the Next Regeneration podcast. As we've looked at regenerative medicine, now really the coupling together of advanced imaging technologies. So now we have less invasive types of approaches. Now we have ultrasonography. We have lower ionizing radiation from CBCT and other opportunities to look at hard tissues. And now we're able to, with a variety of different technologies, when we have such precise types of biomedical imaging that are made available to look at, you know, the complexities of osseous defects or soft tissue defects in patients, we're now able to construct using a variety of different technologies to either 3D print using CAD technologies to develop customized scaffolds that can fit intimately to the complex osseous topography. And so now we're seeing, you know, oral maxillofacial surgeons, periodontists, implant dentists, even in the restorative dentistry realm, we're able to use this biomedical imaging to create restorative materials that fit intimately. Some of them now are being developed at the chair side where these scaffolding matrices can be developed. And so that is one piece I think that's very exciting in the area of regenerative medicine for the individual patient. They sit in your chair and you say, okay, you have this large buccal defect that might be encompassing multiple teeth. You can have a scan and either 3D print a metal scaffold for guided bone regeneration or something that can fit intimately into the site that has an open porosity, where you might deliver a biologic factor, for example. Now, the other part, Elena, that you brought up was, you know, what is patient stratification? So patient stratification is something that is a systematic process where we can identify and predict patient risk levels relating to their healthcare needs, the services, and a coordinative process for the patients. So really, it's taking advantage of precision care, personalized care, and using it in a systematic rubric. And so the goal of patient risk stratification is to identify those patients who are at the highest risk or likely to be at high risk. Again, that's that preventive or predictive component of personalized medicine, to find these high risk patients so you can prioritize the management of them to reduce or prevent these poor health outcomes. And so in a clinical practice, this will help when you have large patient populations or just from a public health standpoint to maximize the use of limited time and resources to prioritize the needs for the patient population. So I think you both know in your practice, there are some patients that just have a low risk for a variety of reasons. Maybe they have a very good health system. They have no risk factors. They're a non-smoker. They're not diabetic. They don't have a genetic history of disease. They have good oral care. Maybe these patients don't need to be seen as frequently, and you'd be able to make those patients a lesser priority for the more advanced types of treatments, whereas those individuals who have more and more of the risk factors get that additional care. So the actual risk stratification through patient risk stratification, it does involve the use of algorithms, sometimes registries or payer data from insurance companies, and then it brings together the dentist provider judgment and the patient self-assessment. So it really is that holistic approach that can help us better customize our care for patients.
Yes. So, you mentioned this patient stratification. And if I understood correctly, so patient profiling is the first step towards personalized oriented treatments. Do you see or have you already implemented one of this concept in your clinic? Maybe you can give us some clinical examples.
Yes. So the use of risk stratification now is being implemented. And I'll give two examples. One is more on the preventive side. And that is, we had a publication back now, it's 10 years ago, on the first study on patient risk stratification in dentistry. We did something simple where we looked at a group. We ended up being able to get genetic samples from over 5,000 patients. And these patients had been seeing a dentist regularly for over 15 years. So we had to use a database of almost a million patients before we could get and identify those regular attenders, people who saw the dentist at least once or twice a year for 15 years. And then they had to agree to give us a cheek swab sample and their genetic information. So what we did was a patient history to look at if they had diabetes, if they were a smoker, and if they had a genetic predisposition for disease and they had the presence of one of the most well-studied risk factors for periodontal disease, that was the interleukin-1 single nucleotide polymorphism. And so we just used a very simple rubric of those three risk factors. And then we put patients in two buckets, those with zero risk factors, so they didn't have the genetic factor, non-smoker, non-diabetic, or those patients who had just one of those three risk factors. And then we looked at if they saw the dentist once a year or twice a year for preventive recall. And then we looked at tooth loss over the 15 years. And basically, to sum that up, we found that patients with zero risk factors, it didn't really matter if they saw the dentist once a year or twice a year. These are those low risk regular attenders. They didn't lose any more teeth over that time period if they went twice a year versus once a year. So that was a way to not over-treat those patients, if you will. Whereas those people who had one, two, or three risk factors, and as the number of risk factors increased, you would predict then they would lose more teeth. And that was the case. As risk factors increased, tooth loss increased, and the value of seeing the dentist more frequently was more valuable. So if a patient did go to the dentist twice a year, they were able to save more teeth, unlike the low-risk patients. So that was an example of using patient risk stratification on a preventive side. Now we shift over thinking about those patients who need regenerative or reconstructive therapy. And we published a paper in 2021 looking at those patients with advanced bone loss with dental implants. And these individuals were candidates for receiving reconstructive therapy. So this was using a dermal allograft barrier with a bone graft, and even using a laser modification of the implant surface in patients that had approaching 50% bone loss around their dental implants. And then biopsies were taken of that granulation tissue. And then we looked at microbiological, the cellular profiles and genetic profiles of the cell populations within those specimens, the tissues surrounding the implants that underwent the reconstruction. And then we were able to risk stratify based on the profiles of the cell population and the microbial load of those patients. And what was interesting is we could then predict those who were high risk. We had, the study was standardized with the surgeon involved. It was standardized with all the different measurements that were taken when these patients were followed. And using this genetic profiling with the microbiological assessment, we could identify those patients who were going to have a much better outcome in terms of pocket depth reduction, more of that stability around those dental implants. So I think we're going to start to see this becoming more and more common. And we've all heard about artificial intelligence, machine learning. As you can imagine, when you start putting together hundreds of different genes with hundreds of different microbiological organisms, you need to use an advanced bioinformatics approach. So machine learning and artificial intelligence was used to do that patient stratification.
That's very interesting. And also, I like your two different examples also because what it appears to me also is that it can help using the resources better, isn't it? Because if you can already identify which are the patients that, for instance, need to be recalled more frequently, you can have a better use also of the economic resources, let's say, of the health system. So that, I think, probably is something that we're going to see more and more in the future. It's very interesting.
Right.
And yeah. And, because I'm a periodontist, I'm always tend to think about how these will apply to the perio field. And, nowadays we still use mainly in the clinics for diagnosis and to assess the treatment outcomes, we still use the periodontal probe and x-rays mainly. But the thing is that, when you use these instruments, they really give you mainly an idea of what happened in the past, let's say. So the history of the destruction. They don't tell you if the patient is going to respond well to the treatment or not, or if the patient has a high susceptibility or not. And I can see that nowadays there is a lot of research about biomarkers like saliva-based biomarkers, GCF biomarkers, so you can measure proteins, genes, or even the composition of the plaque. So do you think that we can really expect something coming out from this research in the future? Like, for instance, we will be able to anticipate the good and bad responders to treatments, or you think we're still far from there?
Yeah, so Elena, that's a great question that I think that there's a lot of exciting new information coming out. So as you said, the use of radiographs and periodontal probing, that's really looking at a historical perspective of the disease. Whereas now I think we're starting to have more and more improvements in biomedical imaging technologies, the use of biomarkers of disease, And these new tools that are coming out will help us assess what is the real-time activity of that site. Can we determine if that tissue is breaking down when the patient sits in the chair? Maybe the patient's coming in for a preventive recall, and you look at the radiographs and you do a probing, you notice it's bleeding. You know, we start to cluster together some of these different risk factors based on our clinical information, which is still always going to be quite valuable. But now we've been able to use either crevicular fluid biomarkers or looking at different pathogens and these salivary diagnostics. So we've used a form of risk stratification as well. Many other people in the field have, where you can take together microbiological information with the local biomarker from a protein biomarker. So for example, matrix metalloproteinase 8 is responsible for tissue destruction, interleukin 1 beta, pro-inflammatory cytokine, or a bone biomarker such as osteocalcin or a telopeptide fragment of collagen. So you can look at the bone destruction, you can look at the inflammation, and you can look at the connective tissue breakdown, and then you couple that with a pathogen. So now if it becomes easier and easier to sample, you know, now there are biosensors that are being made available where you can sample these biological fluids within the oral cavity. And as we start to develop platforms to have a more rapid assessment of these biomarkers, now there are salivary tests that you can get a readout of your, you know, MMP8 levels within a few minutes. And so this information can help you say, okay, is this site more likely to be active? Or is this patient demonstrating a greater level of activity? And so the use of these real-time assessments, I think, can be quite valuable. For example, with when we talk about the four Ps again of personalized medicine, that participatory part, it really helps with patient education when they see the readout. Oh, I have increased levels of this biomarker, or the imaging technology. Now the use of ultrasonography, these types of non-invasive imaging can look at the new blood vessel dynamics that are occurring to nourish that new soft tissue graft that you've just placed around that tooth. Is the graft surviving? Is it thriving in that particular site? So I do think that we'll start using this. And so the term oftentimes used is the signature for disease, where you're using these multiple biomarkers, and that helps with precision care.
It sounds so interesting. And also it seems that a lot of research is being conducted on new technologies. And this is probably also going to impact how we do diagnostics and therapies in the future. Another question, as the editor of JDR for many years, have you seen the research interest in this area is growing? And do you think there will be more and more also funding for personalized healthcare projects in the future?
Yeah, so, you know, being involved in research over the years, just looking at the new technologies coming through, the advances in science as an editor of a journal, we're seeing that, you know, the rate of new discovery is greatly increasing with these new technologies. I do think we're seeing that grant funding agencies are coming up with more and more opportunities to apply personalized precision care within so many different areas of medicine and dentistry. And I think the more we can collaborate with medicine, the better opportunities we're going to have to look holistically at the patient for oral and systemic markers of disease. We see that that's becoming more and more important. You've seen more and more about, for example, the oral gut axis on how the oral microbiome can affect and influence the gut microbiome in a variety of different conditions that patients have. as it relates to gastrointestinal disorders, for example. And we're using personalized precision care to better understand that with microbes that are connected and immunological influences in the trafficking of immune cells from the oral cavity to the gut. Again, just using that as an example. But we're seeing that there's more and more research, you know, ongoing in those areas.
Yeah, I think so. It's a really hot topic at the moment. And I think really that's the future. And I think also the research is going in this direction. And yes, you gave us a lot of insights for this. Thank you very much. And I personally think that, as I said, personalized dentistry will probably lead us into the future. And maybe also moving away from the one-size-fits-all concept towards two therapies that choose the right patient with the right therapy at the right time, and also maybe in line with new technologies. So in this sense, thank you very much that you were with us today. And yes, thank you very much.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you very much. I mean, unfortunately, our time is up, but you really gave us food for thoughts, I would say, and insights on what could be the future really of our profession. And I think we are all very excited and we are looking forward for the next steps in personalized and precision dentistry. And what I really like is that I hope that all the young researchers that are listening to the podcast will find it very useful, because they can understand where the research trend is going nowadays and where they should therefore focus their efforts and maybe, you know, even grant applications. Why not? So thank you very much for that. It was really a pleasure for us to have you here with us today.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Elena and Anina. It's my great pleasure to be with you today. I really enjoyed our discussion talking about the future of personalized precision medicine and seeing where we are now and seeing where the future is headed. So I'll look forward to seeing this continue into the future. And I wish you both well in your careers. And thank you for inspiring others with the good work that you've been doing.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Next Regeneration Podcast by the Osteology Foundation. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.